Hello, and welcome to the Empowerography Podcast. This is a platform created for women's voices to be heard and a place to share their stories, journeys, and successes with the world for the purpose of helping other women who might be on similar journeys. We are empowering women one episode at a time. I'm your host, Brad Walsh, so kick back, grab one of your favorite beverages, and enjoy the stories. The world needs to hear your message and your story, so don't deny the world of that gift within you that the universe has given you. Someone out there needs to hear your story because it will support them in feeling hope, inspired, and even transformed. Do you want to discover how I help get my clients out of their own way, show up, and confidently share their message? I would love to extend an invitation to you to join me in my free masterclass, Start Your Own Podcast from Idea to Implementation, on Wednesday, April 5th at 1 p.m. Eastern. You can find the registry link in the show notes. Hope to see you there. Hello there, Brad Walsh here, your host of the Empowerography Podcast. Today, my guest is Rita Savoia. She is a certified nutritionist, a functional breathing coach, a yoga instructor, workplace well-being consultant, speaker, and a mental health and longevity advocate. Welcome. That is one hell of a lot of hats you wear. Welcome, Rita. I am so happy to have you here and honored to have the opportunity. I know we've been trying for quite a while to get this done, so it's so nice to finally have you here and have the opportunity to sit down and share with you in your journey and your story and the beautiful light you put out into the world through all the work you're doing. How are you today?
Amazing. Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity and the great work that you're doing. I love that I'm part of it. I'm doing amazing. Thank you.
Excellent. Glad to hear it. So that is a hell of a lot of hats you wear, and quite a resume. And obviously there seems to be a common thread, or the hats are tied very closely together in with one another. I'm exhausted just reading through your resume, Rita. How do you find the time for all of this, and how do you prioritize, and how important is prioritization and organization for you?
Yes, and that's the key for sure, is prioritizing. Mm-hmm. But I do have to mention I'm not perfect, and I don't do these all the time, but I'm a big proponent of habit stacking. And if I'm already doing something, might as well be combining it with something else. So that's why. And also I get bored very quickly. So if I had to do one thing, like I love my yoga and I love practicing my own personal yoga practice. But if I had to do just that, I think I'd get really bored very quickly. Like nutrition as well. I love talking about it. But one thing I'm really leaning into is this breath work and this functional breathing. And that's why I'm like, could be it, Brad. This could be it.
All right. Yeah. I like that. Well, we'll get into talking a little bit about that later on. So I'm very curious then, with you wearing so many hats, Rita, what does your morning routine look like?
Oh, yes. Glad you asked that, because I always ask that on my podcast. And so my morning routine, typically it consists of this, but sometimes, like I said, I'm human. I want to sleep in and I don't want to do it. And it's not always.
Shit comes up. Life happens.
Exactly. Yeah. And then I end up doing something else. So I definitely do some sort of breathing. Surprise, surprise. Whether it's breathing and meditation, whether it's breathing and walking, whether it's something, I'm doing something that incorporates the breath. And I set an intention, and it's usually gratitude. So there's, you know, hand over my heart. Literally, it takes me, 30 seconds before I actually wake up. And for a moment there, I listen to wherever I am, if it's the birds, if it's the trees, if it's the rain, if it's anything, just being really connected to the present moment and just being grateful for waking up even, right? So there's that component, the breathing, the gratitude, and then there's some sort of movement, whether it's a walk, whether it's going to yoga, whether it's going to the gym, doing some sort of movement for sure with my body, and then coming back and having my amazing cup of coffee. I love my coffee. Yeah.
There you go.
That's definitely got to be part of it.
Then the tone for the day is set.
Yeah, exactly. <good. laughs> Yeah. I just love the ritual. I love the smell. I love it. But I do wait 60 to 90 minutes. I don't have it right away. So I make use of my own cortisol production, my own energy production. And then I go into the exogenous caffeine.
Rita, what drives, motivates, and inspires you to keep going and excelling at all that you do?
Oh, thank you. Those are really kind words. What gets me going? It's my purpose. It's living with this intention that I knew I was put on this earth for something greater than me, than my career, than my own personal aspirations. So it's just really, it's that purpose, that meaningful intention to live.
When you have that purpose, when you feel that fire in your belly, in your soul. It's indescribable. There aren't enough words to describe how powerful and beautiful that feels.
And it's one of the primary reasons why the blue zones, people living in the blue zones, Dai, I think it's called in Japan. Yep. It's that purposeful living. Like you're waking up in the morning to do something meaningful. Yep. So I found that very early on. So I'm very grateful. For that.
That's good. Not a lot of people do. And there's a lot of people that never do find their purpose. So it's good that you found it early on. Can you share with us, Rita, what you were doing for a living before you made the jump into entrepreneurship? And what was the catalyst for that shift for you? Entrepreneurship.
So this is actually my second entrepreneurial journey.
Okay.
So I was an entrepreneur for 7 years. I had my own consulting, human resources consulting. So personal leadership development, career development. So I was always, I love helping people. And I know that people can really, I really feel that people have so many talents and so many passions and just genuinely want to do great things. But life gets in the way, as you mentioned earlier, or there's that confidence, lack of confidence and so forth, or maybe even just priorities. And so I love helping people. So before that, I was in a semi-government organization and I just hated it. I just, I was in one of those cubicles and you know, I finished my
master's. Cubicle hell.
Yeah, exactly. I finished my master's degree and I thought, oh, I'm going to get an office desk. Meanwhile, it was like a tiny, well, it wasn't that tiny. It was a big cubicle actually, but I felt like a caged bird. That was like, I remember walking with my good friend and just complaining about how, oh my gosh, I can't use my creativity and I can't do this.
Yeah.
And I did have the courage to say, this is not for me, like really early on and say, let me try this entrepreneurship. And then I did the HR aspect and then I had my own digestive health.
Yeah.
We can get into that as well.
Yes.
It led me to this wellness entrepreneurship journey.
Love it. Yeah. I think when we first got connected and we were first speaking about having you on the podcast, it was the human resources aspect and all of that you were into. You weren't as far along in your entrepreneurial journey as you are now.
In my wellness. Yeah.
And so what was the inspiration for you to journey into the world of health and wellness and nutrition specifically?
Yeah. So, I mean, I was always into sports. So I was very much connected to my body and understanding and the intricacies of my body. I always loved that. So coming, I have an Italian background. So for me, Mediterranean food is, you know, relatively healthy food, right? Yeah. It's one of the best diets to follow. So in terms of that, I always knew the power of good food, good quality food. So it came very natural to kind of dig a little bit deeper in terms of what else is out there when it comes to nutrition. But really the pivotal point for me was living in Dubai. So I don't know if you are aware, Dubai is very just over the top with everything, right? So I was overindulging in over partying, not sleeping enough, going to restaurants every single weekend. And just being an entrepreneur, I was eating very, not the best in terms
shitty.
Of quick meals. I was eating tuna out of a can with tomatoes and cucumbers. That was my go-to lunch, really quick. But tuna out of a can, it's high in mercury, it's high in BPA. It ruined my digestive system, basically. I had sugar levels, pre-diabetic sugar levels. I like 33, brain fog, bloating, I couldn't sleep well and all this stuff. And that was my, okay, I need to do something different here or this is not going to end well. So I worked with a functional medicine doctor. We got to the root cause, did a bunch of tests and I was just loving it. And I was just like, really, wow, this is interesting. And I was looking into it more myself and researching. And that's all I did was listen to podcasts, YouTube videos of like, just in general, how amazing the body is and how it can heal itself. And my aha moment, Brad, was when I reversed all these things, by the way, the digestive system.
Incredible.
Working really well, not to its optimal level because it takes years, by the way.
That's a lot of work though.
Yeah, work. Exactly. So I removed a lot of the foods that I was intolerant to that was causing that bloating and that fogginess and the blood sugar issue. But the aha moment for me was when I was diagnosed with polycystic ovarian syndrome when I was 16. So I had irregular menses. I was getting my period every 3 months. As an athlete in high school, I was like, I don't care. This is perfect.
This
for
is
me.
Great. Yeah. I love it.
And the only really solution that the conventional doctor gave me was you got to get on the birth control pill. And something back
of
then.
Of course.
Yeah, that's the only thing they have right now. Something back. And she's like, oh, by the way, you're going to live with this for the rest of your life. You may have trouble conceiving. I don't have children, but you may have trouble conceiving. And that's like at 16 years old to be told that. I was like, whoa, I think I'm okay. I think I'm going to figure this out on my own.
I'm not worried about kids right now. Thanks.
Yeah, I know, right? So I left it alone and I've always had this, right? I always knew I had this. And I would take a yearly pap to just make sure everything is okay.
Yeah.
when I actually did all of this stuff with the functional medicine doctor and I took my PAP, and the doctor, when I went back to my conventional doctor, he's, you don't have polycystic ovaries anymore, polycystic ovarian syndrome anymore.
Wow.
I'm like, what? Can I see my test? And it actually says, no, it's funny because the clinical diagnosis says polycystic ovarian syndrome. And then at the bottom, it says there's no apparent of cysts around the ovaries.
Wow.
Exactly. I reversed something that conventional medicine says it's irreversible. And for me, that was, wow, I need to get into this. This has to be my career. I need to tell the world that if I did it through nutrition, breathing, I got into yoga, I normalized my sleep, optimized it. And your body just so beautiful. It's such a beautiful machine that you remove. If you remove all that crap, all that interference, it'll do its job and not only heal one aspect, which was my blood sugar and my digestion and my breathing, fog, but it heals the entire system. And if you heal the entire system, all of those things that are not in balance,
that also speaks to Western medicine versus Eastern medicine practices. And the Western medicine, their thing is, oh, let's just write a script. Here you go. This is what we can do for you. Where Eastern, they don't get to the root of the cause, where Eastern medicine, Eastern practices do get to the root. I think that Western is just a Band-Aid over a bullet hole. That's all they do.
And there's a time and place for that. If I break my arm, I want somebody to fix it and give me painkillers. Yeah. I don't want to like meditate on it, like work on it and fix it.
Yeah.
But you're right. For most things, yes, the root cause approach is always the best.
Yeah, for sure. I want to continue on the path of your work as a nutritionist. We're constantly being bombarded with all of these fad diets and conflicting nutritional advice available to the public. How do you educate your clients to make informed decisions about their dietary choices and separate fact from fiction for them?
Yeah, and it's true. It can be very overwhelming. So first thing, do not trust Dr. Google. As your primary source of information. Also, avoid jumping on these fad diets, on the wagon of these fad diets. Why? Because we are so unique. We're so, the same way we're so unique in our appearance, exactly that's how we are internally as well. So what may work for you as a diet, as a food, or anything, it could be a poison for me. So personalization has to be at the forefront. So you can use Dr. Google. You can use the information about the fad diets in terms of what's happening and going on. But really work with a professional that knows what they're doing, that can collapse timelines for you. So you're not taking a year to figure things out. You can do it within 3 months, really.
Yeah.
And that would be my advice for sure. And also experiment with your own body, right? And see, literally, if we are in tune with our body, Brad, whether or not this peanut is energizing you or not.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Or this meal is energizing you or not. Or you know what? After dairy, I feel really lethargic or I feel bloated. Well, guess what? Maybe dairy is you're intolerant to it.
Yeah.
If you're really tuned into your body, and which most of us are not.
I was going to say, that's the key, is paying attention to your body and tuning in.
And there's ways to do that, right? But most of us are not. And it's actually really easy to eliminate foods and figure out which foods are good for us or not. So that's what I say in terms of all of this overwhelming information.
It is. It's a ton. It's a ton of information for people to navigate. And they do. They get all this information coming at them and it's, forget it. I can't even be bothered because I don't know where to start. I'm overwhelmed.
Exactly.
So can you share what your philosophy on nutrition and how it shapes your approach as a certified nutritionist?
Yeah, for sure. So personalization is key. And I always say it's a good 80-20. So it's not what you do. And this is really for everything, but it's what you eat 20% of the times. It's what you eat 80% of the times that really matters. So if you want that piece of cake at a birthday party or at a special event, don't feel guilty. Have it.
Yeah.
And just like it's that 20% for the week. I'm not big on like cheat meals or cheat days or anything like that because I'm more about like lifestyle. What's a sustainable diet? That it's not even a diet. It's a lifestyle that works for you, right? And this is where, again, working with someone makes sense and personalizing it. So personalization, 80-20 rule, but there are foods that I really advise everyone to
stay away.
Honestly, like this is where a lot of people ask me, and these are crap foods and I'll get to them in a second.
Yeah.
A lot of people ask me, Rita, don't you crave? I used to be bread and Nutella bread after each meal. I'm talking whip out that nice Italian bread with some Nutella. That was my dessert every single meal. I was addicted. I was addicted to the sugar. It's 70% sugar anyway, Nutella. So I used to be that person. So in terms of cutting out the crap food, which is the chemicalized, refined, the artificial and processed foods, which is usually those white devils. It's white sugar, the white flour, and the sodium. The sea salt is amazing for us. We need it. But a lot of times we're having the sodium, only table salt is really just sodium. So really cutting out those crappy foods from the body, from the system. Because, getting back to, a lot of people say, don't you miss that Nutella and bread? Don't you miss that Krispy Kreme donut? Don't you miss McDonald's? I used to have Taco Bell, all this stuff. But now the way I see it, the relationship with my food is, it's supporting me. Like you literally become what you eat, right? It literally becomes you. And you literally become what you eat, So that taking that to a step further in terms of organic food and grass-fed stuff and everything else. So it's really, for me now, I see food as this nourishing supporting these cells, right? Because we have cells that change every single day, every single month, every single year. And then after 7 years, our entire body changes. We're not even the same person, which makes me wonder about the 7 year itch, by the way. Because at the cellular level, we're not the same person. So it's interesting. Yeah. But maybe that's something we can explore on a different podcast.
Yes. That's a whole other
relationships. Exactly. So now I see the food as either supporting my health and well-being or sabotaging it. So when I see a crispy donut right now, even though I say 20% of the time, I still wouldn't eat a crispy donut. I still have my, when you know too much, you know too much. That's why sometimes ignorance.
You can't unknow that stuff. You can't unring that bell.
And I just know that it's actually causing pro-inflammatory reactions to everything in my system as opposed to supporting it. So I wouldn't, even if it was the last thing on earth, I think I'd rather eat dirt. That's probably more nutritious. I know. But it got me, I was never like this. There is a point where when I drink alcohol, I wake up the next morning feeling really stiff and I don't like that feeling. Yeah. I want to feel nice and vibrant and ready to go. So you kind of start questioning, why am I even doing it? It's that self-awareness piece, right?
For sure, which is huge. Nutrition is a field, obviously, that is continually evolving and growing with new research and trends emerging all the time. How do you navigate the ever-changing landscape to provide accurate and up-to-date advice to your clients?
Exactly. I mean, it's I'm always learning. I'm constantly learning, looking at research and papers. But again, there are these fundamental concepts that I love to stick to. And one of them is ancestral diets.
Okay.
So our bodies, even though our minds have evolved quite a bit, our bodies are still the bodies pretty much that our ancestors had. And so introducing foods that our bodies are not used to digesting and assimilating, I think that it's kind of risque. Like when I started eating avocados, I wasn't eating avocados when I was in Italy. I did find it a bit disrupting to my digestive system. Now I got used to it. So just going back to those principles as well as personalization. So again, what is good for you may not be good for this person. So although there is a new diet out there, will this work with this person? And then I love testing. I love the taking tests in terms of intolerance testing, DNA testing. So what is your DNA? Can it process fats, for example? So putting you on a keto diet when you actually have a gene mutation that cannot process fats properly is like killing your soul. Yeah,
not a good idea.
So no. And I also find that some of these diets as well are good for short-term therapeutic use, not long-term lifestyle use. So again, it's kind of navigating through these concepts.
And adding that personal touch. It has to be personalized to the individual. Because as you said at the beginning, we are all unique. So we all have different needs.
Yeah, at the DNA level, right?
Yeah. Like
how much you can break down and assimilate that specific food. That's why keto works for some and not others. Not everybody's got an amazing story on keto, or it's not sustainable for most people
because
they need those carbohydrates. They need those carbs.
Emotional eating and its relationship with mental health are often overlooked aspects of nutrition. Can you share your insights into how our emotions impact our food choices and vice versa? And what advice do you have for individuals looking to build a healthy relationship with food?
Yeah, so for sure. And that's why losing weight, releasing weight, it's not just a calorie in, calorie out formula. There are so many different aspects that need to be considered. And one of them is this mental, this emotional aspect. Why are you resorting to food? So these are things that, again, with a coach, with somebody that can help
you. An expert.
Yeah, exactly.
Like yourself.
Thank you. Yeah. Yeah. Just to help you identify, why is that food so nurturing for you at these particular moments in your day, of the month even, or in life stages? Because oftentimes we tend to do that because there's something emotionally going on and we're relying on the food to give us that nurturing, right? But can you get that nurturing from something else, from someone else maybe? It's really getting identifying to the root cause. Realize that it's not just going to the gym and killing yourself, because yes, you'll lose the weight, right? If you cut out the carbs, of course you're going to lose weight, because carbs is mostly water. So that what you're losing those first few maybe weeks is actually the water. So of course you're going to slim down, but it's not sustainable. So it's really going after that sustainability and that lifestyle change as opposed to that diet. So bringing in that aspect that it's not just the exercise, not just the food, but the other layer is the emotions. Well, why do you want to lose weight? Why are you eating that extra piece of pizza, for example? There are also, could be your hormones are actually not working the way they're supposed to. Your hunger hormones not telling you to stop eating, right? So again, really creating that support around you and getting that expert help. But one way is mindful eating. So instead of emotional eating, it's being more mindful when you eat. So one thing I tell my clients is no disruptions. Like one of my fondest memories I have of my family is sitting at the dinner table for 6:30, 7 o'clock. And I remember coming home from school and being so hungry. And my mom would give us a little snack and say, but you know, we have to eat all together. So we would wait for my dad and my brother to get home. And it's just such a beautiful thing to do if you can do it, right? It's just to be mindful, to be at the dinner table, no TV, no phones, like to really be mindful and chewing our food. Because the more we chew, it takes 20 minutes for the signal to go from your gut to your brain and tell your brain that you're full. So it's crazy, right? So you could be overeating for 20 minutes if you're not chewing properly, if you're eating really fast and swallowing, inhaling your food, right?
Yes, scarfing it down,
Exactly. So chewing your food, being mindful, being grateful when you first sit down. Like I love grace before meals. And if you're not religious, just be grateful that you have food in front of you. And just taking those three breaths right before you eat. So just really tuning in to why is this food in front of me? It's to nourish me, just really to connect with it. And the worst thing you can do, and this might actually disrupt some people's dinner routine, is have, and if you're in Toronto, have that CP24 ticking with, I don't know how many pieces of news, how many, like 20 pieces of news?
Oh yeah, it's
like
crazy.
Ticker, the weather and this, and it's just bombarding you with, and it's usually bad news, let's face it, right?
Course.
So what are you doing there? You are actually spiking that cortisol. When you spike cortisol, you spike insulin, which causes a whole cascade of other issues, right?
Right.
You're basically not telling your body, hey, you know what? It's time to rest. It's time to digest and assimilate this beautiful food that we're about to have.
Yeah.
Because your body is going to perceive that it's in danger, right? Because it's watching this stressful news. Mm-hmm. I'm sure when you read something stressful and sad and scary, then you embody those emotions.
Yeah.
And then you tell your brain that, oh my gosh, danger, right? Because your brain can perceive the difference between the reality of really danger or your perception of that news, right? That piece of news. So your body's going to prioritize keeping you alive. So it's not going to worry about digesting the food. It's going to release that cascade of cortisol, adrenaline, noradrenaline to get you out of that fight or flight response, right? So again, 6 o'clock news, forget it. Shut it down. Have a conversation with your loved ones. Ask your kids how their day went and really be present. So you're not overeating, you're chewing your food, and you're able to better digest it. So a lot of that I tell my clients as well.
I never, ever watch TV when I'm eating, ever. Yeah. And I love that mindful versus emotional eating. I think that's brilliant. Mm-hmm. Thank you for sharing that and sharing those tips. Appreciate that, Rita. In today's crazy world, hustle, bustle, culture, the hustle culture bullshit mentality, many people struggle with maintaining a healthy diet due to time constrictions, budget limitations, or even conflicting information, as we spoke about. What practical strategies or tips can you offer to help individuals overcome these barriers and achieve sustainable dietary changes?
Yeah, so there are so many, but few that come to mind are, if it's not in the house, you're not going to eat it. You know what I mean?
True, very true.
So it's funny, people are like, oh, I just had that extra piece of, I don't know, chocolate or ice cream. And I'm like, but how did it get there in the first place? So no judgment. That's why never go shopping when you're hungry. Make sure you've eaten and everything else. But what I do say, don't buy it at the grocery store. And if your excuse is it's for the kids, then let's swap some healthier versions. Yeah, because I have some clients saying, but the kids love it. Yeah. Like, well, the kids shouldn't be eating that either. So, or maybe even hide some strategies, hide some of the stuff. Ask your partner to hide it so that you don't know where it is. Or what I say, don't buy it at all. But also stick to the perimeter of the grocery store. I don't know if you've heard this before.
No, I haven't.
Yeah, if you stick to the perimeter, then all of the fresh food and even the milk and the eggs and stuff are in the perimeter of the grocery store.
Well, now that you mention it and I'm thinking about where I go grocery shopping, you're right. It's like the meat counters at the back, mm-hmm. the eggs, the milk, all that stuff is around the sides, and the vegetables, of course, are around the sides. That's very interesting. Yeah, I never ever took note of that.
What's in the aisles is the crap food, the chemicalized, the processed, right? The artificial food and the refined food, because it needs to be shelf stable. So stay away from the aisles and stick to the perimeter. And then another tip, it literally takes, I mean, I love to cook. So I get it if you don't, I really do. But now there's so many of these beautiful services that you can actually get either the meal, the full meal prepared. Yeah. And it's healthy, right? Or you can get the ingredients of the meal and then with a recipe, and it's like super easy because really, Brad, like it takes what, maybe half an hour?
I love cooking. But I have to say though, some of the aisle stuff, like the spices are in the aisles.
I know.
Spices to cook.
Now you're getting cheeky with me. You know what I mean.
Yes. Predominantly, the shit is in the aisles.
Yeah. Like the chip aisle and the cookie aisle. And don't get me started on the oils, right? The hydrogenated oils, like stick to
olive oil, extra virgin olive oil. That's
exactly.
It.
And coconut oil if you want to deep fry. I use that. Or ghee. Ghee is really good too.
Okay.
Clarified butter. So stick to that. And then meal prepping. So meal prepping is a really easy thing that you can do. And you can make it like an event as well, like on a Sunday afternoon, start meal prepping maybe for the first 2-3 days of the week. Mm-hmm. Some things you can meal prep are quinoa, right? You can already cook it and leave it in the fridge so it's ready for you to go. Chopping the vegetables so they're ready to be sautéed, or even just washing fruit and vegetables, right? So that you can just kind of, it's there. Because that's a lot of us, that's what we, I mean, listen, again, I'm not perfect. I'm so ambitious when I'm at the grocery store and then stuff is still in the fridge. And I'm like, I got to make that broccoli, that head of broccoli. I'm not perfect for sure. So if you wash it ahead of time, you put it in a container and it's ready to go. It's so easy, like for kids also to grab and go. So meal prepping is another way to stay with time constrictions and budgets to actually stay within this whole beautiful dietary like lifestyle, right? Of this food.
Awesome. Thank you for those tips. And I love the perimeter. I never thought about it. I think that's amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So gut health, of course, is gaining attention. We're here, gut health, this, gut health, that. How do you emphasize the importance of gut health as an overall, in overall well-being, and what dietary practices support health, a healthy gut?
Yeah. So that's huge now. And I mean, I didn't mention this part of the story, but another reason why I'm doing what I'm doing is because my mom was having sort of anxiety, depression, like mental health. She lost a bunch of weight. And we were actually thinking it was a serious mental health issue, but it ended up being parasites and viruses in her gut. Yeah. So we ended up doing a whole detoxing protocol and it was like a 180. So that's the connection between the gut and the brain. I mean, I think most people know that the serotonin, which is that happy hormone, like 90% of it is produced in the gut.
Yeah.
The gut is like a second brain. 100%, yeah. Right? There's plenty of research now. Dopamine, 70% of dopamine. Again, that's your motivation. That's your sort of reward and pleasure hormone. That is also, and neurotransmitter, that is also in the gut, right? Producing the gut. So it is so important to keep the gut microbiome super healthy. And we are destroying it with crap foods, especially that artificial sweetener. Now, research is out there that it really kills that microbiome. And microbiome is made up of good bacteria and the bad bacteria. But you really want to keep that good bacteria flourishing and overpowering the bad. Antibiotics, the overuse of antibiotics. Antibiotics are great. Okay, we need them. It was a great discovery, but we're overusing them. And our bodies are getting so smart, or those microbiome is getting so smart that it's actually becoming resistant to us. Now you need either a lot more or you need stronger doses of it. Even just stronger antibiotics. And that is killing our gut. And then you wonder why there is an increase in mental health issues, because we're not taking care of our guts. We're overprescribing antibiotics and so forth. So overuse of the antibiotics. So we want to keep that microbiome, that gut microbiome flourishing, or microbiota, I think they're calling it now. And we do this through foods, amazing foods to avoid, but also foods to nourish, which are probiotic foods, fermented foods. So like your sauerkraut, even just a little bit right before a meal, kimchi, which is a Korean fermented eggplant, your tofu, miso soup is really good, kombucha. So all of these foods are really good for gut health.
Beautiful. Thank you for sharing that. I want to talk a little bit about, you mentioned breathing off the top. I want to talk a little bit about your work as a functional breathing coach. Can you provide an overview of what functional breathing is and how it differs from regular breathing techniques?
Yeah, for sure. So when I tell people, it's so funny, Brett, I tell people I'm into breath work and they'll be like, what? Breast work? No, not breast, especially guys. I'm like, no, not breast work. And then I was like, exactly. And I was like, okay, then maybe I need to switch it to breathing. So then I actually say that. And one guy came up to me, so what type of animals are you breeding? And I'm like, no. So it's quite interesting. It's still not mainstream for sure. And my dream is to have as many breath work studios as there are yoga studios, because it is so, so important. What I mean by functional breathing is being aware, having this conscious awareness of how you can change your breathing pattern to change your state, going back to that emotional state, mental state. By just manipulating the breath, you can do that. And breathing is the only autonomic, which is sort of a part of your heartbeat, your digestion, all of these things that we have no control over. We actually have control over our breathing. It's that autonomic function that we have control over. We can use the breath to upregulate the nervous system. So tap into that sympathetic nervous system to give us energy, focus, concentration, or downregulate, which most of us need, more of the downregulation than the upregulation, which is to ease that stress, ease, bring harmony and peace, right, from that stressful, anxious, often overpowered, burnt out state that we're, most of us are in. So yeah, that's functional breathing, is optimizing that through the manipulation of the breath, but also through different, really it's three ways we look at functional breathing from a biochemical perspective. So this is where increasing carbon dioxide actually helps us to oxygenate ourselves more. From a biomechanical perspective, which is incorporating the diaphragm. So using this beautiful, to me, in my opinion, the more research I do, it is the most important organ we have. It's a muscle we have in our body. And oftentimes I get the cardiologist and the heart doctor saying, no, the heart is. And I say, no, because if you don't have the breath giving the lungs that ability,
the oxygen's not getting to the heart.
Exactly. Yeah. See, you're with me on that.
I am 100%. You need that.
Exactly. And then it's the respiratory rate. So looking at it from a respiratory rate and a cadence in terms of how you breathe, the cadence of how you breathe. And those aspects all make up sort of looking at it from a functional breathing, because most of us are dysfunctional breathers, including me. I was as well. So most of us, unfortunately, if you watch a baby breathe, you'll notice their belly rise on the inhale and fall on the exhale. We actually do it the opposite. We're not even using our diaphragm. We're using more of the chest. So most of us are dysfunctional breathers. So it's reversible, right? It's the muscle. You train it, and it can just
through regular repetition, you will build the muscle, and it becomes routine.
And then it's a beautiful tool you have to help you with stress, with resilience. It's just amazing. It's just another tool that's available for free. It takes 2 seconds. There's online, like in the moment, breathing techniques that you can do. And then there's ones that you practice offline that help you build that resilience, which is amazing. And again, going back to that awareness of the breath.
What inspired you to step into the functional breathing piece? How did you get involved? What was the inspiration behind all of that?
Yeah, thank you for asking. So I've been doing pranayama breathing, part of my yoga practice. Because if you think about it, yoga, the yoga we know today, it's only kind of been around for 100 years in terms of the postures and the asanas. The original yoga, or what the real true at the core of yoga, is breathing.
Okay.
But nobody knows that. Everyone thinks of yoga as the postures. Yeah. Yoga is the unity of the mind, body, and spirit through the breath, right? And we do these postures to get us into a meditative state so we can reach higher levels of consciousness. So I was always fascinated with the breath, and I did all that. But I got into the breathing techniques that I'm teaching now about 4 years ago, and had some amazing transformative, like really cool experiences. As Wim Hof says, you get high on your own supply, like some transcendental experiences. And I release a lot of stuck emotions, trapped emotions. Mm-hmm. And even you can go as far as childhood trauma. It's just as effective as talk therapy. If not, I would argue more. Yeah, because your talk therapy, you're in your head, right? You're still kind of trying to figure things out.
You're staying stuck in there. You're constantly talking about it.
Yeah, and you're still trying to figure things out from a logical, like upstairs, when really you got to connect with your subconscious. You got to connect with your soul. What's really going on there? And the breath allows you to open up to that. But my pivotal point moment to want to teach this modality is when I did a breathwork session. And I saw visions of my aunt who had passed away from cancer. And I saw visions of her telling me she's in a better place and for me to move on. And just that beautiful. And she actually encouraged me to start my podcast. 6 months later, I did. Just so it was such a beautiful transformation for me. I was like, wow, that was my aha moment. Like, I need to teach this to more people and to have them experience this.
How does functional breathing play a role in managing stress? And what specific techniques do you recommend for stress reduction?
So one of my favorites, for sure, there's plenty of them. But so what it does is, remember, I love this quote, when you can control your breath, nobody can take away your peace. Someone's pissing you off, someone's stressing you out, triggering you. Seriously, all you need to do is go back to your breath, and then that's it. Because I used to be the person, if you cut me off on the road, Brad, I'm chasing you down. I'm like, I'm putting my foot on that pedal, and I want to see who is this a-hole that cut me off.
Yeah.
And then I would actually stare at him or her, and they're just going about their day, right? They don't even know I'm there. Whose nervous system did I just hype up? Mine. Yes. And again, that whole cascade of cortisol, adrenaline, noradrenaline, spiking my blood sugar. Like, it's just crazy what we do to ourselves. But by calming ourselves down with the breath, then we're inviting in that space and that pause, not to engage with that sympathetic nervous system.
Yeah.
You don't have to.
It's funny. I was reading a book and the author was talking about how when you get amped up and stressed out, you hear people say, just count to 10. He's like, no, don't count to 10. He said, take 10 deep breaths. That will help you to calm things down. Don't count to 10. That's not going to do anything for you. What's that going to do?
Exactly.
Nothing.
Yeah. Taking the breath. Because why? When we take the breath, we signal to the parasympathetic nervous system that we are okay. We're not freaking out. We're supported, and we're not going to take it over the top. So the easiest one, I'll just give you the easiest one, because there's so many, extending the exhale. So if you make the exhale longer than the inhale, then you, again, you tap into that parasympathetic nervous system, you tap into the vagus nerve, and you just tell your body that you're okay. It'll be impossible for you to freak out and for you to act on that stress response, because then it's kind of two opposing nervous systems, right? Mm-hmm. You will guide that calmness through the exhale. So that's the easiest thing to do, is just maybe inhale.
Longer exhale.
For four counts, and then exhale for eight. And then relax your jaw and almost sigh it out. Vocalizing is really good too. Just kind of so in and exhaling.
Thank you for that tip.
You're welcome.
Are there specific breathing exercises that can help enhance cognitive function, focus, and overall brain performance?
Yes. So remember what I said in the beginning is that we can either upregulate that nervous system. So for that laser focus, attention, right? Just think in terms of when you're getting attacked, like you want to be laser focused. You want to know how to escape, where to escape. So you can do that with the breath, or we can downregulate it, which is calming ourselves down. We need to calm down. So one of my best techniques is the box breathing. I think it's super popular these days. Okay. And it's basically the Navy SEALs, U.S. Navy SEALs use this. And if it's good enough for the Navy SEALs, I think it's good
enough
for us.
It's good enough for
us,
everyone,
right?
Yes.
And they also teach this to their snipers, like when they're about to actually pull the trigger. They need to be in this really concentrated mode. What you do is you literally imagine a box. And you can make the sides, it's an equal box. Mm-hmm. And you can make it four counts, whatever works for you, three counts, six counts, whatever works for you. So we can usually typically it's four. Okay. So we breathe in four, three, two, one. We hold four, three, two, one. Exhale for four, three, two, one. And then hold four, three, two, one. And then so you're drawing this box with your breath. With this imaginary box, with the inhales, the holds, the exhales, and the holds. Before a presentation, I do this. We do this even before sleep to relax me as well. Or even when I'm about to do something really cognitively heavy, then I will use the box breathing to help me concentrate.
And is it just one, like four, breathe in four, hold four, exhale four, hold
four? And then hold four, and then you keep going. So I would do it for a couple of minutes.
Okay.
Yeah, I would probably do it for maybe 3 minutes, start with three, five, so it feels good.
Mm-hmm. Perfect. Thank you very much for that tip. Appreciate that. With all of the hats and titles that you wear, Rita, as mentioned, they're all very closely interwoven and tied together. I would go so far as to say that self-care is the foundation for all of it, all the work you do. So what holistic self-care practices do you recommend, and how can individuals incorporate them into their routines?
Yeah, so it is about self-care. So my company is called Savoia Self-Care. And even before self-care was a big term, to be honest.
Yeah.
So what techniques? So I'm going to be biased and I'm going to say breathing. I mean, look, you could be doing a breathing technique. Nobody has to know you're doing it.
Yeah.
Like, it's so covert as well. Yeah. Nobody's got to know you're drawing a box on your head. You're doing this stuff, right? Another really cool one is humming. When you hum through the nose, you increase nitric oxide by 50-fold.
Really?
Yeah, nasal nitric oxide. So you're opening up the capillaries, the vasodilator. So it's amazing. So even humming your favorite song helps you to relax and bring in that oxygenated blood. I do this with headaches now. If I have a headache, I will literally visualize the breath going through that to that area and then hum my favorite song. And it helps to open up. What's a headache? It's constriction of blood vessels. You want to open up those blood vessels with the nitric oxide that it's produced with the nasal breathing, and it's increased with humming. Okay. So yeah, for me, it's tapping into breathing for sure. And again, we have 2 minutes before bed. We have 2 minutes before we
There's no excuse.
Honestly, when we're waiting in line, when we are walking, when we're walking.
When you're sitting in the, when you're sitting on the toilet in the bathroom.
Yeah, drop your phone.
Habit stacking.
Washing dishes, doing the laundry. Like you're just totally
cooking.
Yeah, you can totally incorporate these all the time. I think breathing is so easy to weave into your everyday.
Yeah.
For sure. So I think that's a really cool self-care practice to embrace. But also a few other practical ones, just nature walks. I mean, it doesn't even have to be nature, just walk.
You know, a lot
of people say, it doesn't have to be a 40-minute walk or an hour walk. Just get out there. When you're feeling frustrated, when you're feeling that stress, that you will be amazed of how much a walk can literally clear your head and just be connected to Mother Nature as opposed to in her head. Just really indulging in nature walks for me is beautiful. Yeah. And also I try as much as possible. I think as a self-care habit, sleep is so underrated and just really winding down the day so that you're not hyper alert towards bedtime. You're not eating. I have one rule. I don't have many, Brad. I don't live by many rules. And one of them, well, I have three, I guess. 3 hours before bed, no food. Because if your body's digesting the food, then it's not doing the other amazing things that it does during sleep. There's so much detoxing that goes on. Brain, body, everything is happening. Reconsolidating all those beautiful learnings and memories that you've done. Anyway, you've got to be sleeping for that. You need to reach a certain level of those theta waves. So 3 hours before bed, no food. 2 hours before bed, no work for us alcoholics.
workaholics?
Workaholics. Sorry, entrepreneurs and even just high-performing, high-achieving people. We could be alcoholics too, but yeah. No work 2 hours before and 1 hour. And this is usually the toughest sometimes even for me because I want to watch my Netflix and just chill. 1 hour before bed, no screens. Okay. Yeah, because then to really help with that melatonin production. Yeah. The pineal gland and that blue light is a killer. Like it is. So if you want, like, invest in a nice pair of those blue light blocking glasses, try to avoid overhead lighting, right? So then you really prepare your body. Again, think back ancestrally what our ancestors did. Yeah.
Beautiful. Thank you for sharing that.
No problem.
Now, spirituality, of course, is also a key aspect. How do you encourage individuals to explore and nurture their spiritual well-being?
Yeah, so, I mean, I've had my own spiritual awakening, and it's almost like you can't go out and search for it. You can't go out and look for it. It finds you. When you're ready, you'll know when you're ready. You'll just be more open to things happening for you. However, there is preparation that you can do. So whether it's through food, getting rid of those crap foods, eating healthy, really nourishing your body, physical preparation, which is taking care of your body through movement and physical aspect of your body, right? And then there's this whole like mental, being in a good place from a mindset perspective. So understanding that this negative self-talk that you have is not conducive to living a life that's aligned with who I want to be. So there's a lot of preparation that actually opens, in my opinion, which is what happened to me. It opened the door to spirituality. And then I walked in and now it's like, oof, I'm loving it here. I'm not going back. I'm not going back there. Like, this is it. This is heaven. This is heaven on earth. So spiritually connected with your soul and your mission and your passion. So I really do feel that when you are ready, when you do the work, when you remove the interferences and really tap into all of these supporting ways to ultimately, Brad, it's raise that self-awareness. Some people are not even aware that they can be living a much happier.
There's a lot of people walking around sleepwalking.
So it's just do the work and then that self-awareness will just increase and then open the door to the spirituality.
Love it. You have created what you call the six pillars of self-care. Can you share with us what that's all about and how you incorporate those into your everyday life?
Yeah, so I've talked a lot about them already. So these actually came about when I was sitting down, I was strategizing, what do I want to do in my business? What's the mission? Who do I want to help? And through the research, I came across Blue Zones, and that's why I'm obsessed with longevity. I'm on the 130 plan, actually. Okay. And yeah, just sort of what's working for them. Why are they living the longest and happy and healthy and mentally there as well? And then obviously came along across other research. And I found that there's these fundamentals. You can't start biohacking and doing all these crazy advanced stuff if you don't have these fundamental pillars ready, part of your lifestyle, part of what you do on a daily basis. And so I started with mindset, but I think I want to change it. I want to put breath work. And I did breath work even before I said conscious breathing, even before I was a certified breath work facilitator. Okay. So it's so cool how these things sort of come about. It's, ooh, they're foreshadowing my passion and my obsession with it now. So I would actually start with conscious breathing, sacred sleep, because again, that sleep is that reset, that way to recharge our body that we need. We desperately need. Like a mission that I'm on as well is forget that you'll sleep when you die, because you're not, you're dead. It's not a badge of honor not getting a good night's sleep. And for most of us, it is 8, even maybe 9 hours. So we need that time to recharge. And then comes the mindset piece. So again, how are you talking to yourself? What are some limiting beliefs? What are these negative thoughts? So that's really important. Again, the self-awareness piece comes in. And then comes social connection. So I was talking, Brad, about social connection when the world was telling us to stay 6 feet apart.
Yeah. Yes.
And it's funny because when I used to share this, they're like, are you sure? I'm like, yeah, you know, we need that oxytocin. We need to be touching. We need to be hugging. Mm-hmm. We need that social connection. So community, like living in community.
Yeah.
And then of course, metabolic flexibility. So which is my nutrition, understanding what foods work, personalizing that nutrition, staying away from those crap foods, and then movement. And I don't mean as in the gym. I mean joyful movement, like really expressing yourself, even ecstatic dance or just in general dancing, like incorporating some sort of beautiful movement on a daily basis. So it kills me when I go to the gym or I go to a like somewhere yoga and we're fighting for a parking spot. I'm like, really? Park further. So that's part of your warm up, right?
Yeah, you walk a little bit further.
Exactly. So incorporating that movement where when I go to a mall now, I park furthest parking. So, or a grocery store. So just incorporating more movement instead of taking the elevator, take the stairs.
Yeah.
So just really, because it's so important to move your body.
What would you say is one of the most important things you've learned in your life? And what was your life like before you learned it? And what was your life like after learning it?
That's a beautiful question. I think I had to learn this very early on. So I immigrated to Canada when I was 8 years old, did not speak the language, and kids could be cruel, right?
Yeah,
so making
for sure.
fun of me and of course, I wasn't speaking the language, making fun of my brother, my younger brother, my sister. So I felt like I had to learn very quickly who was my friend and who was my foe. I guess before that, I just thought everybody was my friend. And after that, I got better at realizing that, hey, not everybody's your friend. And it's okay. And they call me the Terminator in my family. I find it very easy to just terminate toxic relationships, toxic people, and that are not serving me or the energy that I really need to thrive. So that's kind of something that I had to pick up really quickly. And I
Rita the Terminator Savoia. I love it. That's what I'm going to call you from now on.
I'll be back.
What do you think your unique skill set or superpower is that's helped you become successful?
Oh, wow. That's a good one too. The belief. Like the word belief just popped into my head right now. I really genuinely do think that we can do anything that we put our mind to it and
100%.
Our emotions and our heart. And so that belief that's there for me and it's kind of guided me. And that's why I've switched careers and I've embarked on entrepreneurship. And it's really that belief that if you believe it, you can create it.
Agreed. 100%. We are completely capable of doing anything that we set our minds to. It is possible. Anything is possible.
Yeah, it's so true. And it's going to be hard. And most of us do give up. And that's why we don't get to that end result.
Sure.
But the people that don't is those success stories that you hear.
Now, speaking of success, how do you define that word? What does the word success mean to you?
Yeah, I mean, it could be success on a personal level, professional level. For me, it's just really living in alignment with your values. And if you're living in alignment with your values, you're living an authentic life. And so it's just easy. A relationship is going to be easy. It's going to be hard work. It's going to be work, but it'll be easy. It's almost like what I'm doing now. Like sometimes I'm like, wow, I'm literally working. Like my hobby is my work. I love this stuff.
To do this for a living. How amazing is that?
Yeah. I mean, even if I had billions of dollars, I would still be doing what I'm doing today.
Yeah.
So it's living in alignment with those values that you value, your mission, and really living with authenticity.
Yeah. What challenge in your life has shaped you the most, Rita?
Interesting question. I think it's what my mom went through and really believing that it wasn't pre-dementia and having faith in myself and following my intuition and something that's why I'm doing what I'm doing. And just that fuel that really fuels me to keep doing what I'm doing. So that was
beautiful.
Pretty pivotal. Yeah.
What does the word empowerment mean to you?
Say that all the time, empowering women. I think empowerment for me is, I feel like it's confidence and freedom to be living that life in alignment with your values and your mission and who you truly are. So it's having that confidence and freedom to do that, being empowered.
Okay, we're going to jump into a little rapid fire section here. So the next grouping of questions, just be 2-3-4 word answer type thing, okay?
Okay, let's go. That's how we're going to get through all those. Okay, I get it.
How would you describe yourself in one word?
Cheery.
If you could teach the world one thing, what would it be?
Self-love.
What is one thing that you love about yourself that is not related to your physical appearance?
My heart, my compassion for people.
What is your favorite self-care practice?
Nature walks.
If you could be remembered for one thing, what would it be?
This is a good one. Love yourself.
Beautiful. That concludes our rapid fire section. Now back to our regularly scheduled program. Rita, what is your why?
To help people facilitate their own self-healing and to really live a life that they deserve, to help them realize this potential.
If you could step into my shoes, what question would you have asked yourself that I didn't ask you?
What more do you want to do? What's next?
What's next? Go ahead.
What's next? I think bringing what I do on an international basis.
Love that goal. What's something surprising that you've learned about yourself in this past year?
That I still have so much more work to do. that my shit don't stink, basically. That my shit does stink, sorry.
I know what you meant.
No matter how much self-development, personal development, I've been doing personal development when I was in HR, and now this whole beautiful journey, wellness journey that I'm on, I just still get frustrated, still get triggered, and things, and it's just like, Rita, you're supposed to be handling this with a little bit more calm and ease, right? That's kind of one realization that it's just an ever-ending journey, I think.
If you had the opportunity to sit down and have a one-hour conversation with one woman, any woman in the world, who would it be and why?
Yeah, so I don't know, two women came up for me. The first one was my grandmother from my dad's side, so my paternal grandmother. I hear so many amazing stories about her, but I don't remember really spending time with her. So it would be really cool to go back and talk to her. And then the really weird, bizarre, maybe not that bizarre, is I've always been fascinated with Egypt and just in history and just Cleopatra, how she was, I guess, the queen or a ruler, co-ruling with like the men back then. So kind of just talk to her and her on ruling with men and in that era would be cool.
Interesting. Okay. If you could go back and give your younger self one piece of advice, what would that piece of advice be?
I think it'd be, continue being a child. Don't grow up or don't fully grow up. Stay a child. Stay playful.
Well, all that shit comes from conditioning, though, right? Because we're told, stop. And when we get into the adult years or even the teenage years, stop acting like a kid. Stop acting like a child. Why? What's wrong with that? That keeps us young at heart. That keeps us young up here.
Yeah.
It's good for us.
Yeah. Stay playful.
That. Lastly, Rita, if you were to deliver your last 30-second speech to the world, your tribe, your corner of the world, your people, what would that last 30 seconds sound like? What words of wisdom would you impart?
You're beautiful. You're strong. You got this. You're amazing. Keep going. You only live once. Don't worry about the mistakes. They're learning experiences. You're strong. Yeah, all these beautiful affirmations. I drill them with it.
Excellent. Rita, thank you so much for taking and making the time to be here with me today. It has been an absolute pleasure and honor to have the opportunity to sit down and speak with you and share in your journey. I'm so glad that we finally got to do this, but as they say, divine timing, this is when it was meant to happen. So I'm so grateful and I'm honored to have you as a member of the Empowerography community. Thank you for who you are and the bright, beautiful light you shine out into the world through the work you do.
Thank you for doing the work that you're doing. And it's been an absolute pleasure and honor to be part of this community as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Once again, my name is Brad Walsh, host of your Empowerography podcast. Today, my guest has been Rita Savoia. She is a certified nutritionist, functional breathing coach, a yoga instructor, workplace well-being consultant, speaker, and mental health and longevity advocate. Thank you so much, Rita. I hope you have a beautiful rest of your day.
Take care. Ciao for now.
Thank Thank you very much for listening to this podcast. If you haven't yet, please be sure to subscribe, rate, review, and share with all your friends. You can find me at viseuphoria.ca and follow me on Instagram at Empowerography Podcast and on Facebook at Empowerography. Please join me next time for another inspirational story from yet another amazing woman.